somewhere in the bowels of the city that never sleeps.
Kevin McCullough, radio host with Salem Media.
Is a man also not sleeping.
Syndicated radio talk show host Kevin McCullough.
And that guy would like a word with you.
Many of you know him from as Votes for Damas.
Of course that Kevin show is going to be great. The only thing that could be greater, of course, would be that Donald show. But we don't have that, so we have that Kevin show.
Featuring the music of Dick Tunney and the Dream in Color Orchestra. Still to come, he's a tax-collecting good guy. Paris Patel, Matthew, from The Chosen. Sketch comedy from Penn Holderness. And President Trump plays millionaire, along with Lainey Wilson, back in the spotlight. And now, from Times Square, home to the artist who removed Post Malone's face tats simply because Mother Taylor said to, here's that heaven.
Thank you, Dave. You know, that really is something. I saw that video last night, and my goodness, I didn't even recognize him. He looks like a completely different person. But, you know, when Taylor asks you to do something, you do it. All right, check the news.
For Assignment Desk Weekend, I'm Kevin McCullough. Rough week for President Joe Biden. First, he told Iran, don't. And then they did. And then he told Israel, take the win. And they didn't. Then he announced sanctions on Iran, who he's given more than $100 billion to, and they just laughed at him. The week was so bad for the president that he started even telling people that his ancestors had been eaten by cannibals.
My Uncle Bosie was a hell of an athlete. They tell me when he was a kid. He got shot down in New Guinea, and they never found the body because there used to be a lot of cannibals, for real.
But such a shaky week left the president looking for his identity, on policy matters especially. And since his identity has evidently always been a little bit fluid.
I was sort of raised in the Puerto Rican community.
I am Joe Bidenopoulos.
I grew up in a heavily Irish Catholic community in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
I got raised in the black church. He knows I'm not kidding.
As a student of the Persian culture,
I probably went to shul more than many of you.
I come out of the black community.
Not fundamentally unlike the Palestinian people.
I might say raised in synagogues in my state.
I grew up feeling self-conscious. My name didn't end in an SKI.
I was raised in a neighborhood where I felt self-conscious. My name didn't end in O.
That's kind of how I was raised, like so many Americans of Irish heritage.
Hard-working people, the middle class, the neighborhoods I got raised in.
I was raised on GM.
I was raised by Danny Noe.
I was raised by a righteous Christian.
I got raised on automobiles.
If you'll notice, there's only one identity that he never claimed and all the identities that he has claimed, and that is to be a woman. So on Friday, he took his pencil to paper to finally achieve his unachievable identity and rewrote Title IX. Now he can apply for and receive a woman's scholarship, use the ladies' bathrooms and locker rooms, and compel people to use his new her nouns. And if you don't, now his Department of Justice can charge you with harassment. Silly man, girl. In non-Biden crazy land news, a Civil War cannonball was found in the yard of a Virginia homeowner. Oddly, the authorities demanded the property owner not touch the ball as it may be considered still a live ordnance. Assignment Desk Weekend feels compelled to point out to the authorities that Civil War cannonballs were not grenades and did not explode. And finally, Taylor Swift has released a double album. The Troubled Poets Department has 31 songs and runs 2 hours and 3 minutes. Amidst the wreckage of songs pertaining to the breakup of past loves, she's also released a few songs thought to be dedicated to her new beau, Travis Kelce, the tight end for the Kansas City Chiefs, including what many are concluding is a diss track on teammate Kadarius Toney. Swift says, quote, call the amateurs and cut them from the team, ditch the clowns and get the crown. In response, online observers asked, how would her fans or she even know what she was talking about. They just started watching football last year. For Assignment Desk Weekend, I'm Kevin McCullough.
As we all saw on last week's show, Joe Biden, your competition for the next president of the United States, failed to get past the very first question when he incorrectly guessed what the A in USA stands for. Let's play Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? All right, here we go. Question one for $100. Like I always say, our first question is usually very simple and straightforward, so you shouldn't have any problems here, Donald.
Thank you, Meredith.
Which of these mathematical structures is used to describe the quantum state space of a system of indistinguishable fermions? A, Hilbert space, B, Banach space, C, Fock space, or D, Clifford algebra?
This is the first question.
Yes.
And this is the easiest question that I'll be getting all night.
That's how the show works.
So the answer to this question is like common knowledge.
I mean, it's pretty basic quantum theory, Mr. Trump.
The words basic and quantum theory don't really go together, Meredith. Luckily, I have just the right guy to call. He goes by the name of Elon Musk. Maybe you've heard of him.
All right. Where's Elon calling from, Mr. Trump?
As long as he has the right answer, he could be calling from Mars for all I care.
Okay, we have Elon on the line now, Mr. Trump. You will have 30 seconds and your time starts now.
Elon, which of these structures is used to describe the quantum state space of a system of indistinguishable fermions? A, Hilbert space, B, Banach space, C, Fock space, or D, Clifford algebra?
Just give me a second. I'm waiting for my Neuralink to finish downloading the answer into my brain. Okay, yeah, so the answer is...
Bad luck, Donald. Your time just ran out.
Meredith, what the hell are you talking about? There was at least 5 seconds on that clock.
No. Our fact checkers have confirmed that your time did in fact run out.
Meredith, you can't do that.
Kinda just did though, so...
All right, let me ask the audience.
Okay, audience members, pick up your keypads and vote now. This may take a little longer than usual this week, as we're partnering with a charity who will be sending in mail-in audience votes.
Mail-in audience votes? Do I at least get to know the charity?
The Ohio Center for the Mentally Disabled. Ooh, looks like no clear winner there, Donald. The disabled mail-in votes may have skewed that a little bit.
You think? All right, give me the 50-50.
Certainly. Computer, take away 2 wrong answers and leave Donald with the correct answer and 1 remaining wrong answer.
Oh, come on. This is so totally rigged.
You have no peer-reviewed evidence to support that claim, Mr. Trump.
That's because it just f***ing happened. I might as well just take a guess. All right. C, final answer.
Donald, you had $0. And I'm afraid you still have $0. It's the wrong answer. It is, of course, B, Fock space.
You just switched those answers.
What answers?
The ones on the screen.
No, we didn't.
Meredith, what are you talking about? C was B. I had the right answer. Meredith, you and your showrunners, you should be ashamed of yourselves. This is a total con job. You are fake game show.
Mr. Trump, I am not going to allow you to keep spreading misinformation and conspiracy theories on air like this. I think the main point audiences can take away from tonight is that Joe Biden is at least equal to you in terms of cognitive function. Perhaps even maybe a little ahead, as you have to give him some bonus points for guessing Israel. Now, before we go, I'd like to once again thank the Ohio Center for the Mentally Disabled for providing us with the mail-in audience votes this evening. And I'd also like to thank the George Soros Foundation for providing tonight's questions. Good night.
Good morning in the boarding area. We screwed up.
He got a plane that holds 190 people, but we sold 200 tickets because we assumed that at least 10 of you would drink one too many Mai Tais at the airport P.F. Chang's, but here you all are. So we're going to kick some of you off the flight, but we're going to sugarcoat it and call it a travel credit. Redeeming that credit will be the most difficult thing you've ever done on a computer. We will give you a 27-digit alphanumeric code that you will have to input perfectly onto a web page that was designed by the same person who invented waterboarding. And after we kick you out, we will give you a $20 food voucher at the airport, which will pay for one half of one water bottle at any gift shop located here, here, or aft. Also, remember, whatever alternate flight we give you will be delayed 3 hours. Thank you so much for flying with us. We do know that you have quite a few airlines to choose from, and you chose this one, so that's on you. So, yeah, enjoy the flight, except for those of you who've been kicked out. So enjoy not the flight.
Times Square, I have a chat with one of the people from The Chosen that we have not had a chance to speak to in all of the interviews that we've done, and I have this distinct kind of fun factoid about my show. I think I've had more of The Chosen cast on than any other show in America, which is kind of cool. But tonight on radio and television, would you please welcome Carlos Pippen. Carlos, it's so good to finally get to chat with you face-to-face.
Yeah, I didn't know that you have the record of interviewing the most chosen actors.
Actors,
so I'm honored to be
management
low
directors
on the list.
Yeah, you've just been the hardest to get a hold of, so that's been part of
well,
the
fun. Well, they keep us busy at The Chosen in the best ways possible, so.
You're, like, from the very outset of the first episode, you're the character that is tying this whole story together and portraying Matthew and writing down as much as you can. The way you have chosen to adapt this character is, I think it's very intriguing, and I've wondered this from the very first, but what went into your research to play the gospel writer Matthew in The Chosen? Because you've certainly taken distinct tacks with his personality, his habits, his persona in ways that I had never thought of, and I'm just curious how you came up with those.
You know, first and foremost, having Matthew be portrayed on the autism spectrum was a decision our showrunner, writer, and director, Dallas Jenkins, made. He felt that it was very plausible that Matthew, based on his history with numbers, his fine attention to details, it made it all plausible that Matthew could have been high-functioning or somewhere on the autism spectrum. So when I got the audition, I was just instructed to play it like that. And I had done research on this before because I auditioned for a show earlier that year where the main character was autistic.
Oh, wow.
So just using those notes, I kind of went into the audition, got a call back, didn't get the part. You know, I don't know if you know this, but John the Baptist was the original choice of Matthew. And then like a week into it, Dallas's wife Amanda had a change of heart and said, I think it's part.
After they'd been shooting for a week.
So he wasn't established yet, but yeah, they had started production. Right. So then I got the call, kind of stepped in, and then, you know, Dallas and I had director meetings. I, on my end, was observing people and kind of just getting into the body of Matthew and kind of finding his voice of the way he wanted to show it on The Chosen.
The gospel writers are interesting people because they were all very, very accomplished in what they did. You know, Luke was a doctor, a man of medicine, science. Matthew was a genius when it came to numbers and accounting and all the stuff. What, in your own study of the role, what were you most, I don't know, touched or impressed by about who this person was?
Through our show, I've really loved exploring the what ifs. The how did Matthew become, you know, the historical figure we know him as, right? So the backstory that our show brings to it has really enriched me, even as an actor, because I have learned that we don't, Matthew's known to be this hated tax collector, right? But we never thought to think, why was he hated? What must his life been like? Why was he this way? So in portraying Matthew, I kind of figured that stuff out, because, you know, a lot of times people want to vilify Matthew before his calling. And a villain never knows that they are a villain, you know? They're just operating on the way their cards were dealt. So that's was something that I have learned so much from, and just intriguing for me to kind of explore the other side to that when in a performance or in a character, and just learning. It makes me feel like I'm learning a lot more than just portraying the role.
It's been fun to see how the wide swath of characters have been interpreted by the cast, and it's brought, at least in my mind, and I think in the minds of my children, who have actually been taken by great surprise in a pleasant way, at how much they've really understood and gotten into the story. Wow. Through The Chosen's presentation, even with all of its hardness and difficulty, and as the story is starting to go towards a darker place. Yeah.
Can I ask what age demographic?
14, 11, and 9.
That's amazing, because that's kind of what our show is appealing to right now.
Yeah.
You know, we have that new generation of people really loving the show and just kind of learning through and help deepening their own faith in it, too.
Well, and I'm thinking, if it helps them understand their faith, and my 14-year-old just got baptized this last year, mm-hmm. and it was his choice, and he made a decision to do that, but they're able to latch on to some of the concepts that the show has really put forward. And
right.
I think it's done that most effectively through the really high definition of who these characters were, whether it's a Roman guard turned governor, or whether it's one of the disciples, or whether it's one of the brilliant women that are being portrayed in the cast. There's so much definition. It's like 3D or 4D of who these people are.
Yeah.
Where when you're just going to church and you just read the story through a children's Bible or whatever, that the story can sometimes come off a little flat off the page.
Right.
This is giving them something to really touch and feel.
It's the backstory. It's the, you know, Matthew being ostracized from his community, being shunned out of society, you know,
yeah.
and showing just how jaded he was as an individual until Jesus called him, and that activated him. So you're seeing his journey, his obstacles, and we're learning from that as people, because it motivates us.
Yeah.
So, and that's across all the disciples and what they all go through, because each one is, I like to call it a video game, each one has a unique personality, and that's what makes the show so relatable.
Talk to me a little bit about why this project intrigued you, and I know that you were also in the Angel product last year that had...
The Shift?
Sean Astin, yes,
yeah.
The Shift.
Yeah.
You've found a niche in this kind of pro-family, pro-life-giving message type of entertainment, and I'm just curious as to what was your attraction to that arena?
You know, I am pro-good writing, and I think when people can tell a story effectively and it can stir something in you to want to be a part of it, is a motivating factor for me in
yeah.
taking the projects. With The Chosen, when we first started in season one, we only had the funding for the first four episodes. I know you've probably known that.
Right, right.
We didn't know if it was going to finish. We didn't know when we'd even see each other. But for me, the motivating factor was the writing. And as an actor, there are a lot of times where you have to memorize auditions and things like that. And for me, it's sometimes hard. But with The Chosen and the script I had, I'm not even kidding. I read it once and I just had the words.
Wow.
It felt like it fit. So the whole thing, it just felt like this fit. My background, I don't know if you know this, but I graduated with finance. So
okay.
I'm a numbers
there
guy.
There you go.
You know, as far as I'm a numbers guy. And it just kind of just, I just felt like this show has allowed me to find my purpose. And I think when you can find projects like that, those are very special. So you hang on to them. And
it's one of the most inspiring television series that's ever been made. Not
right.
just of a faith nature or anything, but I'm saying in the history of television. People have to come up and tell you that things you've done have meant something to them. What have been some of the feedback from people that have expressed gratitude for your work?
You know, it's, people are like, do you ever get tired of hearing it? And my answer is always going to say no, because each person in this world has a unique experience.
Mm-hmm.
So each one it means something to them, so it means something to me. My very first interaction, before I even knew what was happening with the show, was just a parent telling me, they just came up to me and said, thank you.
Hmm.
And I was just like, for what? And they said, well, you know, I realized my child is autistic because of you. We were watching an episode and they were just
oh,
in
wow.
front of the TV and saw Matthew, and then the child just blurted out, oh, Matt, I like Matthew, he's like me. And I think it just activated something in the parents realizing that their child has special needs or just needs a better way to communicate better.
Stick around for more of That Kevin. Next, That Kevin Show with Kevin McCullough.
Continue with my exclusive sit-down with Paras Patel of The Chosen.
Either to get to know their own child. And I think when you're a part of something that's literally bringing families together, mm-hmm. having them understand and communicate well, that's just, you don't see that every day. There's a reason why this show has over 600 million viewers, because you're seeing things like that. You're giving families hope, but also you're allowing them to communicate with their children. And it, you know, a lot of parents feel pressure. They sometimes might feel like a failure when they don't feel like they're communicating well with their kids.
Well, the human element is something that bleeds through every frame of the show to the screen. And I think that that's one of the reasons why people that observe Christianity have found it an easy tool to invite friends to watch with them. And as they're thinking about big issues of good and evil and right and wrong and, mm-hmm. and faith and belief and all that stuff, it's provided a landing strip where people can say, hey, I would just like to introduce you to what the message of this person historically was all about. Yeah. Let me ask you about tactics for some of the time that we have here.
Can I just add on to what you
said? Go ahead.
Yeah. You know what's really cool is that I have friends that are not religious, and they said, it's just a good show. I love this. I know the story. I've grown up with it. But just seeing the backstory and just what, you know, how it's so plausible that life could have been just like the way our lives were back, you know, right now, has been very motivating to people.
That's what I meant. The human element is
universal. Like anybody relates to, and it's just, I will admit, I, you know, sometimes judge the material, you know, but I've been so grateful that it's inspired and opened something up in me and experiencing my part in this.
Is that a common thread that you guys on the set have kind of experienced together, especially those of you that have been together for all four seasons? Because the newer people haven't been there.
Yeah.
But those of you that were here on day one, this has been quite a ride.
It's been, you know, and that's what keeps us humble. When you start something where nobody is even wanting to talk to you, you know, like media-wise.
An app?
Yeah.
We're going to put this on an app?
What is this? Never unheard. Right. Yeah. And then, you know, first four episodes, don't even know if we'll finish the first season kind of thing. And to be where we are, I just got back from Brazil and we premiered there. I had people there thanking me because they didn't even know about the term autism, but they're seeing this through Matthew's portrayal and realizing that they have a loved one that is probably on the spectrum as well. So they're finding, they're learning. That's the impact that this show is having. And it's just so rare. And I know you probably know that.
It's great when I have you guys on the show, because afterwards I'll post. And oftentimes on the podcast, people from Brazil, Spain, Italy, other places will be hitting the like button because they're excited and they know it's coming their way.
Did you ever have that before, like as an audience? Is it?
On some level, just because the digital arena, there's no barriers to it. But I have noticed specifically where you guys are distributed and where things come from kind of has a concurrence. Season four, kind of a different way of releasing it, went straight to the theaters.
Yeah.
Had a great run, by the way, for only being
in the brought it back.
Theaters
they
a couple
the
weeks.
They brought it. People wanted it. Yeah.
Is there. So are you guys movie stars now, or is it still a TV show? Like, how do you think of this? Is such a kind of all-encompassing, multi-platform, everywhere that they'll let us kind of thing.
I think I can speak on behalf of our entire show saying we are just people wanting to motivate and impact the world. We are nothing. We're just telling the story because we're passionate about it.
I think
that's what you can see on camera is our bonds off camera, and that kind of shows into our characters, our dynamics. And we really just harmonize well together. We're so close, and I know you've probably heard it from others, but we've been through the ups and downs. Like, you know, when I think about just even what we go through filming, like weather, lightning strikes, having to get shut down.
Oh, all the turmoil. The
yeah, but we're this unit that's just so close. So we have been through the ups and downs. And I think when you've seen people at their low lows and high highs, it just keeps you humble. And there's no other way. I would never see myself as this movie star, or TV star. Yeah. I'm just someone that's kind of found his purpose and making an impact in my own way and representing the autism community and showing them that they are belong in this world and they are included and seen.
Yeah.
And just kind of giving representation what it needs. I think a lot of people grow up not feeling like they are represented and seen. And I think this just gives someone confidence into feeling like they can be a Matthew.
All right, Paras Patel, thank you for being with us. And of course, the entire universe of what Jesus was about was making sure that everybody, from the rich rulers to the poorest and the most needy, found their way back to God through his message and through his time. Thank you for sharing some with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm glad I finally made your list of chosen people to meet.
When they said he's coming to New York, I said, I've got to come talk to him.
We did it.
We did it.
Hopefully it's not our last conversation.
Yeah.
Stick around for more of That Kevin. Next, That Kevin Show with Kevin McCullough.
My coffee in the That Kevin Show mug. We gave one away in the first hour. If you did not have a chance to win tonight, you could win next week. We're giving one away, a beautiful one of these away, every single week for the entire year. Just send us your email, thatkevinshow@gmail.com, thatkevinshow@gmail.com. Tell us you want to get mugged in the subject line, and then in the body of the email, you got to put your address so we can ship it, and then tell us if you want the white mug with the black logo or the black mug with the white logo. Both of them look great. I love both of them. I want to say thank you because we just a couple of weeks ago kicked off our brand new effort to try to help free and liberate as many captive slaves in northern Sudan as we possibly could. We've done this for the last number of years, and friends, your faithfulness and your help have gotten us to where we can now say that we have freed nearly 4,500 individual human beings from slavery because of our work together. And I'm just so super excited about that. But another great week. I wanted to tell you, we were at 42 slaves liberated last week with just, we just kicked off the campaign, and another 10 slaves were liberated this week because of your faithfulness and your efforts. That brings us to 52 of the 208 slaves that we are hoping to liberate this year. 52 of them are already spoken for, and you have helped us in that regard. So thank you so much. 888-342-1010 is the number, 888-342-1010. Now, if you're just listening for the first time and you're saying, Kevin, I've never heard this. What is this liberating slaves thing? We live in America. We don't even have slavery anymore. I know that. There's actually, you may not know this, but there's actually bad news on this front. There is more human slavery on planet Earth right now than there's ever been in human history. And unfortunately, there is some slavery taking place in the United States right now that we don't even think about. But there are sex slaves coming through the southern border. The cartels are trafficking children. They say that on any given day, there may be as many as 2,000 to 3,000 children chained to a basement somewhere in the nation's largest cities. These are all things that very much bother me and concern me and make me lose sleep at night. But a few years ago, I found a wonderful organization called Christian Solidarity International that is committed to ending slavery on this planet's surface. They are working currently in 18 countries. And the project we've been most closely associated with over the last number of years has been to help liberate the slaves that were taken as part of the spoils of war from the Sudan Civil War. They have been set free by those of us that have been able to liberate them, but there are still maybe 35 to 40,000 At their peak, there were about 185,000 in captivity in northern Sudan. Now there are about 30 to 35,000, and we are hoping that this year we can at least liberate another 200 or so of those. What does it cost? A lot of time and effort. We have retrievers that are going into the northern portions of Sudan, talking to the slave masters, negotiating the liberty of these slaves. And then when they come back to South Sudan, which some of them have not seen for 10 or 20 years, we are giving them everything they need to start their life brand new. A $250 gift tonight gives them what's called the bag of hope. And it is literally everything they need to start their life. Food, sleeping, accoutrement, tarps and things to keep them protected from the weather, cooking utensils, gardening utensils, fishing utensils. And the best part of all of it is they get a little kid goat that it will grow into a fully mature mother goat. They can have more goats and start a micro enterprise for themselves and support themselves. But they also will have milk and cheese and other things that they need from the goat's production. And all of that, the bag of hope, the food, the kid goat, the utensils, all of it is included in the bag of hope gift for $250. My family and I have, by God's grace, tried to liberate one slave every month for the last 4 years. I'm asking you to liberate one slave tonight. 888-342-1010. One just like this.
It took me 15 days to walk the journey back to South Sudan. But that marked a passage for my life, from the horrors of slavery to a future filled with hope. Taken when I was just a child, snatched away literally from my mother's arms, my dreams of happiness were shattered as my living nightmare began. And suddenly, I found myself a slave. My slave master stripped me of my Christian faith and even my name, and he stamped on me instead a Muslim name and identity, and the beginning of a life of endless work. My worst day in slavery is still a vivid memory. My master sent me for a very difficult job of fetching water. The jugs are very heavy, and the distance is very far. When I was on my last trip to the well for that day, a group of Arab men approached the well and began calling out to me. And then they raped me. My master refused to accept my story and even blamed me for what ended up happening. And he did so even though he'd raped me so many times before that. Because I have no idea of my birthday or even hometown. When I arrived to South Sudan, I was very blessed to be able to join a community of 150 other former slaves. And as I am now pregnant with a child that was conceived from my abusers, it's my hope to be a loving and caring mother. I hold no remorse against this child because I am so grateful. I wish to send thanks to God and thanks to those of you who cared about me and brought me safely home. And I would like to ask that you not stop until every captive is freed, fed, and healed. My name is Abouk Gurang, and because of your faithfulness, I was freed in November of 2023. And this is my story.
Serving it up with a no-drink minimum. It's that Kevin Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, she's back with a friend. This time, his name is Ernest. It's Lainey Wilson. And Would If I Could.
You say that you would like to try again. You'd open up your heart and let us back in. Well, part of me wants to so bad I can't stand it. Part of me wants to be perfectly candid. I would if I could, but I can't, so I won't, but I want to. I love to say yes, but it's best if I don't, though I'd like to.
The combined talents of the rising star that is Ernest and the new dominance of contemporary country music from Lainey Wilson, just killing all the award shows, taking home everything this year. Anyway, that's it for us tonight. I'm Kevin McCullough. We expect to have a great week, and we will see you back here again next weekend for That Kevin Show.